truly all of my questions, from the most elementary, where did I come from, why am I here, where am I going, to the most incredible unveiling of the mystery of godliness, are laid out in God's beautiful book. I am instructed in all the marvelous aspects of life, even how to successfully interact with angels and devils. I am instructed in how to please God, even taught how to hear his voice and to speak with him. I am instructed in how to overcome the devil by the blood of the Lamb and the word of my testimony. Imagine this. I am even instructed on how to transform life's deep, dark storm clouds into soft white cotton balls simply by a change in elevation. I am instructed on how to participate in the glorious, eternal purpose of the born-again sons and daughters of God. It is all in God's majority text, Holy Bible, and as a redeemed child of God, it is mine, and it's yours too, if you are a redeemed child of God. Dear visitor, have you yet to be born again, as Jesus states in John 3:3? Jesus answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. I assure you, the claims you've just read are not exaggerations. If anything, they are understatements, and they can be yours. In just a few moments, I will invite you to follow me in a simple prompt, and if you follow from your heart, all of the claims above and so much more will be yours. Today, all of your sin and shame will be washed away by Christ's cleansing blood, all of it. Today, all of Satan's bondages in your life will be broken, all of them. Right now, you are seconds away from becoming a brand new creature. Here is the simple prompt I promised. Click on the Further with Jesus for childlike instructions and immediate entry into the kingdom of God. Now for today's subject. God said, Genesis 1:24-28, And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. God said, Psalms 33:6, By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. God said, Psalms 19:9, The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Man said, I'm good. I'm happy with who I am, and I don't need no Jesus reigning on my parade. To be honest, I'm not sure how good I actually am. You see, I lie some. I cheat when it's in my favor. I perform lewd sexual acts when I can. But who doesn't do that? We're all animals, don't you know? Now the record. Welcome to God Said, Man Said, feature 1227. That will once again certify the powerful bona fides of God's beautiful book, His Holy Bible. All of these faith-building features are archived here in text and streaming audio for your edification and to be used as bait by the fishers of men. Every Thursday Eve, God willing, they grow by one. Thank you for visiting. May God's face shine upon you with light and truth. Welcome to the God Said, Man Said Genesis series. This is part 7. Each of these features begins with the following information from the first feature. According to a 2006 issue of Discover magazine concerning the deceased Carl Sagan, Sagan approaches religion like any phenomenon. He isn't on a quest for life's meaning, for a comforting philosophy, or even a guide to how we should treat the neighbors. Sagan seeks truth of demonstrable kind. As a puckish example, he wonders why the book of Genesis didn't include God-inspired truths. End of quote. I recently reviewed an advertisement from a magazine called Free Inquiry that also has a problem with the God of creation and the first book of the Bible called Genesis. Under the heading, "Is God Big Enough for the Universe?" Free Inquiry writes, "The authors of Genesis proclaim that God made the heavens and earth in less than a week. This feat must have amazed these Bronze Age authors, even though they thought the heavens extended only so far as the sky above them. Of course, they did not know what stars, planets, or galaxies were. We now know that the universe is so much bigger and so much more complex." End of quote. The born-again scratched their heads in bewilderment. Did these folks actually read the book of Genesis? Now, I suppose they did, but God's revelation is only revealed to the humbled hearts of the children of faith. This God Said, Man Said series will be called the Genesis series. It is our intention to travel through the entire book of Genesis and publish one major God-inspired truth after another. We will be pulling from previous God Said, Man Said features and adding the latest information as we go. A special note to the children of faith. The skeptics are looking with eyes closed shut for inspired truths. This is the seventh feature in the God Said, Man Said Genesis series, and we are still in Genesis chapter 1 with a ways to go before we get to chapter 2. The book of Genesis ends at the 26th verse of chapter 50. Be of good cheer, child of God. The truth is with us. Genesis 1, 24 through 28, "Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and every thing that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over everything that moveth upon the earth." The greatest of all God's creation miracles must be his creation of mankind, because we were made in his image and after his likeness. All things were created for our sakes, an understanding that today's science knows as the anthropic principle. As we will see in Genesis chapter 3, sin enters into the world and the law of sin and death begins to reign. One of the many consequences of sin entering the world was that the diet of many of God's once vegetarian creatures began to include other creatures. Now, there is a reason a person can eat a hamburger but not a man-burger, and that reason is laid out in Genesis 9, 5, and 6. "And surely your blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man." The image of God is serious business. For those looking for God-inspired truths in Genesis, how did the image and likeness of God escape them? We have been created with God-like attributes. Jesus lists four of them in Mark 12, verse 30. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. So many staggering truths can be extracted from these marvelous attributes. This feature will address the brain. The incredible, even immeasurable, power and capacity of the godlike human brain flies full in the face of the theory of evolution, which is the god of the world's academics. This empty theory requires an extreme amount of time and an absurd but and mathematically impossible amount of chance, along with the concept of the survival of the fittest, in order to have even a semblance of working. So how does the human brain fit into this conversation? The brain's capacity far exceeds our needs. This feature will pull from various extra-biblical sources, as well as previous God-said-man-said features, and will surely establish that we have godlike brain power between our ears. Truly, the human brain is the most underdeveloped resource in the universe. Man was made in God's likeness. Stuart Burgess, who has written over 150 scientific papers on the science of design, expounds on the marvels of the brain in the book Wonders of Creation. A healthy human brain has something like 100 billion nerve cells called neurons, which communicate with one another via synapses. Each individual nerve cell can have thousands of connections, which means that there are hundreds of trillions of connections in the brain. These synapses function like computer microprocessors with memory storage and information processing capabilities. The staggering complexity of the human brain is far greater than any computer made by man. Studies by brain researchers at Stanford University found that a single human brain has more switches than all the computers in the world combined. We are often unaware of the many functions that our nervous system is carrying out each moment of our lives. During daily living, billions of nerve impulses are traveling throughout the human brain and nervous system. This system controls both voluntary functions like muscle movement and involuntary functions like blood circulation and digestion. Most of the control of the body is coordinated by the brain, although some reflex reactions happen in the spinal cord. Dr. B.H. Lipton writes the following in his book, The Biology of Belief. When it comes to sheer neurological processing abilities, the subconscious mind is more than a million times more powerful than the conscious mind. Dr. Caroline Leaf expounds on the non-conscious mind in her book, Switch on Your Brain. The non-conscious metacognitive level is on the far left. It is where 90 to 99% of the action in your mind is. Your thinking and thought building happen at this level. This level operates at about 400 billion actions per second and drives the conscious cognitive level. It operates 24 hours a day, end of quote. Adam and Eve were not a grunting caveman and cavewoman. To the contrary, they were genius upon genius, and there is a plethora of information to certify this truth. There is absolutely no reason to believe that Adam could not read and write. This is the same man who, on his first day alive, possessed an articulate and broad vocabulary, not only sophisticated enough to name all of God's creatures, but also to communicate with God himself. The famed Jewish historian Flavius Josephus was commissioned by Rome to write the history of the Jews. Josephus, he lived and wrote shortly after Christ's resurrection, and he reported the following about Seth, the son of the world's first man called Adam. Now, this Seth, when he was brought up and came to those years in which he could discern what was good, became a virtuous man. And as he was himself of an excellent character, so did he leave children behind him who imitated his virtues. All these proved to be of good dispositions. They also inhabited the same country without dissensions and in a happy condition, without any misfortunes falling upon them till they died. They also were the inventors of that peculiar sort of wisdom which is concerned with the heavenly bodies and their order. And that their inventions might not be lost before they were sufficiently known, upon Adam's prediction that the world was to be destroyed at one time by the force of fire and at another time by the violence and quantity of water, they made two pillars, the one of brick, the other of stone. They inscribed their discoveries on them both, that in case the pillar of brick should be destroyed by the flood, the pillar of stone might remain and exhibit those discoveries to mankind, and also inform them that there was another pillar of brick erected by them. Now, this remains in the land of Syriac to this day, end of quote. How about something a little more current regarding the genius of God's first man? The following excerpts are from the God Said, Man Said feature, Meditation Rebuilds Gray Matter in 8 Weeks. My soul is continually in my hand. The world's science was shocked. Sprinkled around the globe, science discovered individuals who had experienced some type of traumatic event, after which these individuals then displayed savant-like skills. A savant typically demonstrates extraordinary abilities in a single skill, such as art, mathematics, architecture, or music. Despite these abilities, a savant is typically socially incapable of functioning in the human community in most other ways. But now, a small group of people, after experiencing a traumatic event, an accident or blow to the head, for example, demonstrated savant-like skills, but still maintained all of their original normal life abilities. This discovery was most distressing to the camp of the evolutionists because their refrain of time and chance couldn't produce these latent outer-worldly skills. These particular humans, or possibly all humans, have these latent, savant-like powers already on board. Do we dare to say, even download into us by God? When the researchers were asked how one might unlock the inner savant without undergoing a traumatic event, the answer was to meditate. Several paragraphs from the God Said, Man Said feature, Unlock and Develop God's Brain Power, will set the stage for the latest research. Did Adam inherit from God phenomenal capabilities, and is today's science beginning to discover this truth? Psychiatrist Daryl A. Treppert began researching the savant phenomenon in 1962. He authored a feature in Scientific American that was discussed in the God Said, Man Said feature, The Critics and Adam's Penmanship. A few paragraphs from that follow. The August 2014 issue of Scientific American published a 6-page feature titled Accidental Genius. In the article, research addressed the concept of acquired savantism. Through an accidental blow to the head or a traumatic experience of some kind, people have been known to emerge from that experience with unearthly and unlearned savant-like skills in music, math, or other subjects and still retain normalcy. Following are a few excerpts from that feature. Discovery of this unusual phenomenon raises the possibility that dormant potential in some artistic or intellectual realm, an inner savant, resides in each of us. If so, perhaps a way can be found to tap these buried abilities in the absence of disease or injury. One plausible explanation for the hidden talents to emerge in savant syndrome, whether early in life or induced by injury, is that these reservoirs of skill and knowledge must be inherited in some way. We do not start with a blank slate that subsequently gets inscribed through education and other life experiences. The brain may come loaded with a set of innate predispositions for processing what it sees or for understanding the rules of music, art, or mathematics. Savants can tap into that inherited knowledge for better, far better than the average person can, end of quote. Finally, Treffert writes, A technological solution may not be an absolute prerequisite, however. Meditation, or simply adherence to assiduous practice of an artistic style, may suffice to allow us to switch on the more creative right side of the brain and thus explore undiscovered artistic capabilities. Acquired savantism provides strong evidence that a deep well of brain potential resides within us all. The challenge now is to find the best ways to tap into our inner savant, that little bit of Rain Man, while keeping the rest of our mental facilities intact, end of quote. Mr. Trefford suggests meditation as the way to open up the inner savant, and nobody meditates like the born again. As a believer meditates upon the Word of God and practices the principles he discovers, he will find that wisdom will begin to multiply. A host of verses declare this scientific truth, end of quote. The first Adam was not a brutish, grunting caveman. Concerning mutations in the human brain, you'll find the following excerpts in the God Said, Man Said feature, Adam and Eve, Mutations and Devolution. Consider this headline from the May 2013 issue of Acts and Facts. Is mankind getting dumber? Several paragraphs written by science writer Brian Thomas follow. Do today's children have lower IQs than yesterday's? Yes, according to measurements of intellectual and emotional strength gathered from different countries and contexts. The results show the same basic decline and resist the notion that public or other forms of education are to blame. Could the cause instead lie within? Stanford University professor Gerald Crabtree thinks so. He published a pair of essays in the journal Trends in Genetics, citing new discoveries that show why the human intellect is surprisingly fragile. This biblical creation-friendly notion didn't sit well with the authors of a rebuttal paper, who countered that the human intellect is robust. What lies at the heart of this disagreement? Bad science or bad assumptions? Crabtree identified two fundamental processes as the main culprits. First, human intelligence uses neurons, and these cells can only function properly if their genes stay in top shape. Second, these genes are susceptible to degradation. This loss of organization occurs continually as mutations slowly, irreversibly garble genes, and the resulting errors pile up and are not corrected. Each new generation accrues about 60 new mutations to the gene-coding DA regions of the human genome. Crabtree applied this rate to calculate that every 20 to 50 generations, we should sustain a mutation in one copy of one of our many ID genes. As a result, in the past 3,000 years then, about 120 generations, each of us should have accumulated at the very least 2.5 to 6 mutations in ID genes. Accordingly, the human intellect perhaps reached a peak. Let me read it again. Accordingly, the human intellect perhaps reached a peak 2,000 to 6,000 years ago. This appears to confirm three lessons that can be drawn from the Bible. First, Adam and Eve's brains were originally very good. Second, we had our best brains about 6,000 years ago. Third, humanity has suffered genetic degradation since then under the curse. Both Crabtree and his detractors tried to extrapolate some set of numbers to make conclusions about the unobservable past. The rebuttal authors who resist the genetic decay principle handpicked numbers that support evolutionary history. Crabtree instead used numbers collected from real-world studies. And those studies present an ever clearer case for a human race that was very good at the start, but is steadily falling apart, end of quote. Compared to the Adam of Genesis, we are the brutish, grunting cavemen, end of quote. The likeness of God's dazzling brain power rests between our own ears, and at born again, God begins to develop it at light speed. Romans 12:1-2, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The following excerpts are from the God Said, Man Said feature, The Superhuman Brain 2. The human brain single-handedly destroys the evolutionary premise that time, chance, and need create life. Unfortunately for this evolutionary premise, the brain that exists between our ears has infinite capabilities of which we're only just beginning to become aware, and need played no part in the development of our brains. Evolutionist paleoanthropologist Leslie Alio of University College London said in reference to the human brain, "You don't evolve large and expensive organs unless there's a reason," end of quote. She is right, of course, but fails to make the obvious God connection. We are all equipped with brain capabilities so vast and so past our needs that it's unfathomable. This godlike brain is by far the world's most underdeveloped resource. It is one of the last vestiges of our supernatural origin when man, our great-grandfather Adam, was immortal and dwelt in a place called paradise. The incredible brain continually boggles rationalization and scientific scrutiny. The question posed in February 2004 issue of Discover magazine was, "One of the great questions of human existence is whether we are smart enough to figure out how our brain works," end of quote. It used to be said man used about 10% of his brain capacity, but just recently science revealed we use only a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of our brain, and that the human brain has infinite capabilities. It would almost sound braggadocious if we were not for the fact that we are designed in God's image and have between our ears God's brain power, God's computer power. The power of the brain is truly dramatic. The claim is that 22 to 58% of all sickness is in the mind. It is amazing how readily our physiology responds to words. It should be no surprise to the student of the Bible, because God spoke us into existence with his words, and therefore all things are constructed of words. If that sounds bizarre, see Made Out of Words and Secrets and Demonstrations of Power Speaking on this website. The brain that sends messages to the body at the rate of 240 miles per hour is an enigma to the fields of science that pursue its secrets. John Horgan's book, The Undiscovered Mind, gives a hint of the depth of the mystery of the human brain. In 1990, the Society of Neuroscience persuaded the U.S. Congress to designate the 1990s the decade of the brain. The goal of the proclamation was both to celebrate the achievements of neuroscience and to support efforts to understand mental disorders such as schizophrenia and manic depression, also known as bipolar illness. One neuroscientist who opposed the idea was Thorsten Weissel, who won a Nobel Prize in 1981 and went on to become president of Rockefeller University in New York. He stepped down to return to research at the end of 1998. Born and raised in Sweden, Weissel is a soft-spoken, reticent man. But when I interviewed him at Rockefeller University in early 1998, he became heated at the mention of the decade of the brain. "The idea was foolish," he grumbled. "We need at least a century, maybe even a millennium, to comprehend the brain. We still don't understand how C. elegans works," he continued, referring to a tiny worm that serves as a laboratory for molecular and cellular biologists. "Scientists had discovered some simple mechanisms in the brain, but they still do not really understand how the brain develops in the womb and beyond, how the brain ages, how memory works. We are at the very early stage of brain science," end of quote. The superhuman brain is highlighted in the article titled Neurocomputers in Discover magazine. The following two passages are from that feature. Brains derive awesome problem-solving abilities from two characteristics of their individual cells. First, a neuron can be in any one of thousands of different states, allowing it to store more information than a transistor, which has only two states on and off. Second, neurons can choose which other neurons to talk to by rearranging their own synaptic connections. Neurobiologists call this self-organization. Neurons speak a terrifically complicated language. Each word in the neuron lexicon is a repeatable pattern of electrical impulses. And when neurons talk to each other, these electric words are transmitted across synapses, electric connections that link neurons into a network. Each synaptic connection can have as many as 200,000 channels, end quote. South Florida Sun Centennial columnist Nancy McVicker reported on the 2002 PBS series titled The Secret Life of the Brain. She wrote this: "A baby's brain in the first year of life may be the most complex organism on Earth, wiring itself to form 1,000 trillion connections between brain cells, many more than there are stars in the universe," end of quote. A very positive thing to note is that the once-thought notion that the human brain stops developing at a certain age and time is simply not true. The brain, if exercised, will continue to develop new neurons indefinitely, end of quote. Medical science is learning how to harness the supernatural power of the godlike brain, and what a shocker, it's by utilizing the power of words. How marvelously true in Proverbs 18:21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." Of course, students of the Scriptures know that it has never been anything more than words. Psalms 33:6, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the hosts of them by the breath of his mouth." We are and have always been a product of words. Textbooks know it as placebo or nocebo. The following excerpts are from the God Said, Man Said feature, "Can Your Brain Make Your Body Sick?" You're aware of the placebo effect in clinical measurements, for instance. A proposed medical remedy is measured by taking a group of people and distributing the correct medical product to part of the group and a harmless sugar pill or placebo to the other part. Results are then tabulated. According to the State University of New York Downtown Medical Center in Brooklyn, the placebo, the sugar pill, clocks in with a cure rate of 33%, which is sometimes higher than the proposed remedy that is administered. They also discovered that the benefits of the fake placebo spikes measurably upward if the doctor talks up the benefits of the fake placebo. It is a matter of words. Converse to the placebo effect is an effect now known as the nocebo effect, which is simply measurable result of negative words. What science calls placebo, the Bible calls hope. Medical researchers are shocked at what they're finding. Discover Magazine, July-August 2014 publication, in an 8-page spread, addresses the subject of the placebo effect. The subhead of the feature reads, "Once dismissed as a psychological curiosity, the placebo effect is now recognized as the key to the brain's inner pharmacy. If only doctors knew how to open the medicine cabinet." Excerpts follow. The new evidence has established that placebos trigger the brain's inner pharmacy, in essence a warehouse, perpetually stocked to deliver active drugs to itself. In addition to improving Parkinson's symptoms, that same inner pharmacy can affect conditions like pain, depression, irritable bowel syndrome, anxiety, schizophrenia, and more. As the placebo effect emerges from a long history in the shadows, the new question is, how can we use this age-old brain trick to our advantage? When Wager analyzed subjects' brain activity, he found that people who reported the greatest relief after receiving a placebo also showed the strongest reduction in activity in the ACC, the thalamus, and the insula, all evolutionary primitive brain structures that respond to physical pain. Suddenly it was clear that when a patient improved on placebo, it wasn't just some delusion or an effort to please the person in a lab coat. It was a measurable brain event and reflected an actual reduction in the experience of pain. Today's placebos are widely recognized not as a psychological mirage, but as a potent inner pharmacy that we might someday even harness. But the real placebo revolution may be in reshaping clinical practice. Jensen says many doctors cripple their chances of leveraging the placebo effect by acting disinterested or lacking confidence with patients. She would know. When she started out, she had trouble eliciting a placebo effect. It was the doctor, not the patient, who had to change in order to boost the placebo. She learned to exude confidence and crafted a warmer manner, and her patients began to respond. End of quote. The brain is a literal pharmaceutical manufacturing plant and administrating medical team all in one. It creates from the materials at hand a magnificent array of drugs and medications and automatically administers them when needed. Imagine, your brain weighs only 3 pounds, yet a computer with the same number of bits would be 100 stories tall and cover the state of Texas. Do you need more proof that your brain is made in God's likeness? Then consider this. To build a building 100 stories tall that would cover the entire state of Texas and to fill it with information bits would cost more than the aggregate wealth of the entire world. Your godlike brain has infinite capabilities and is beyond price. Did I mention there are over 8 billion of these brains upon this earth? So much for evolutionary gibberish that says we evolve because of need. We are all equipped with brain capabilities so vast and so far past our needs, it is unfathomable. God said he created us in his likeness and his image. Genesis, one God-inspired truth after another, and we are still in chapter 1. Unlock your godlike brain to its full godlike potential. Visit Further with Jesus for childlike instructions and start today. God said, Genesis 1:24-28, and God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind and cattle after their kind and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. God said, Psalms 33:6, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the hosts of them by the breath of his mouth. God said, Psalm 19:9, the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Man said, I'm good. I'm happy with who I am, and I don't need no Jesus raining on my parade. To be honest, I'm not so sure how good I actually am. You see, I lie some. I cheat when it's in my favor. I perform lewd sexual acts when I can. But who doesn't do that? I mean, we're all animals, don't you know? Now you have the record.